sorry, with the Institute for Hispanic Health and the National or National Council of La Raza.
Good afternoon, everyone. I realize that I stand between you and leaving the convention center to your hotel room. So I promise to be interesting, witty, and brief as much as possible. As it was mentioned, I'm with the National Council of La Raza, and for those of you who are not familiar, it's obviously not an academic institution. However, the National Council of La Raza and CLR is the nation's largest Hispanic advocacy and civil rights organization, and we do work in five different topic areas, one of which is health, and we work both in the programmatic sense, which is what I'm gonna discuss today, the development of materials in a Promotores program, as well as on the policy level. So I just wanted to provide that brief overview of NCLR for those who may not be familiar. Have no disclosures, no relationships to disclose. I do want to acknowledge some very key individuals that made this program possible. First, my co-authors, Natalie Hernandez and Ander Nicasio, and as well as our promotoras de salud. They're the individuals who were actually collected the data and provided us with information on their experience delivering the charlas as well as with the materials. And our two community-based partners, the Dominican Women's Development Center in New York City and Centro San Bonifacio in Chicago, Illinois, as well as our funder, Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals. Very briefly, as part of this presentation, I'm going to give a brief overview of the need for the project, an overview of it, our formative research key findings, our field testing results, and the next steps. In terms of why we came to this project, we had been working with the national campaign to prevent teen and unplanned pregnancies. And as we were going through this, we started realizing that we had not been playing in this area for a long time. We were actually very active in the teen pregnancy prevention movement many years ago. But as we started looking at the new data in partnership with the national campaign, some things were really striking to us. You know, 50%, close to 50% of Latinas are of childbearing age. They represent 15% of all women of childbearing age in the U.S. And the unintended pregnancy rate is highest, with an estimated 49% becoming pregnant or having an unintended pregnancy. We also know that 1/3 of Latinas don't have insurance, and the sterilization rate is very high. So it's sort of what sort of options do they think they have if they're choosing sterilization? In addition, we know that as a whole, Latinos, the Latino population, is going to be 25% of the U.S. population by 2042, which is actually 8 years earlier than previous estimates, and that the Latino community has the lowest median age of all groups, approximately 27 years old versus 36 years old for the general population. So Latinos are in their prime reproductive years, and a new statistics just came out showing that 20% of children under the age of 5 are Latino. So the need to address unintended pregnancies is great amongst this community as the population continues to grow. I want to briefly go into the overview of how we decided to develop this project. At NCLR, before we engage in any projects, we sort of do a gut check to make sure that this is the right project for us and this is the right approach for us. And so we engage in a process that looks at the following phases. One is planning, ensuring that this project's the right fit, there's a need for it, which I think the data that I just presented show that there's a need for it. We engage in formative research, and we do focus group discussions, in-depth interviews, literature reviews to A, see what the literature says, see what's missing, and then B, talk to the community directly to hear from them what they think may be missing and how they want to receive that information. We then engage in materials development, and I'll be showing you some sort of snapshots of some of the materials that we did. And then field testing to ensure that the messages that were developed do actually get to the community and the community understands them. And then evaluation and follow-up. One of the great things, I think, in terms of our formative research is not only talking to community members, but we also talk to the promotores de salud, and those are the individuals that are going to be implementing the intervention or the workshop or the health education session, and it's important for us to get their buy-in from the beginning because they are the ones that are going to be delivering the materials that are created, and we want them to be able to see the process from beginning to end of how we spoke to them, how we developed materials to address some of the needs that they said they had, and then put that into the training materials and then train them and then allow them to go out into the community. So it's a method for us to get their buy-in and their dedication to the project versus coming in and saying, hey, we have this project, we want you to do X. So they actually get to see, and oftentimes the titles of the project comes from the focus group findings that we have and comments that the promotores or the community make. So in 2006 and 2007, we conducted 16 focus group discussions in California, Florida, New York, and Maryland. And we did this to ensure geographic diversity as well as Latino subgroup diversity. And we partnered with Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals, who had approached us about wanting to develop some culturally appropriate materials around contraception in general. So we developed a formative research project to explore specific aspects of sexual reproductive health with an emphasis on family planning methods among Latinos. It was originally for two cities, then we expanded to four, and those are the four locations, and to explore male and female perspectives in choosing family planning methods and the decision-making process surrounding contraceptive choice and use. And we felt it was important to include the male perspective because oftentimes when we're talking about contraceptive use and pregnancy, we're not talking to the men or to the young men and the boys to get their perspective on how much information they want or how engaged they want to be in the process. So we did speak to 160 participants, 113 were women and 47 were men, and they were divided into promotores groups at each site, as well as a group of older women and younger women at each site, so younger women being 18 to 34, older women being 35 to 49. And then the groups of men were also divided two sites because of demographics in those cities had older men, 35 to 49, and two of the sites had younger men, 18 to 34. We did do a moderator's guide that was in Spanish, and all of the groups were conducted in Spanish with the exception of a group in New York that was somewhat bilingual. So we just want to disclose that. Our key findings, as we went through this process, we wanted to make sure that we captured information that could be useful for this project, but also for other future interventions. And one of the things that we found was that there's not really a distinction made amongst the individuals that we spoke to between sexual and reproductive health. Various barriers did discourage Latino couples from talking about it, such as stigma and taboos, and that's not something that's discussed. But if you discussed or you framed it within family planning, it wasn't as big of an issue to discuss sexual reproductive health. We didn't know, as most people would state, that the decision about using birth control, what type, and the decisions about family planning do rest with the Latina woman. However, men did want to have some input in that, and they wanted to be at least informed about contraceptive choices, because as we found in the discussion, some women sometimes were prevented by using contraception by their spouses, or were relying upon their spouse or partner to use a condom, and that was sort of, sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't. In terms of barriers, obviously language was a huge barrier for a large part of the community. They did not have Spanish-speaking providers, or they felt there was a lack of Spanish-speaking materials that were addressing contraception, or what was available might not have been appropriate or did not have the information that they felt they needed. And then access to healthcare was a huge issue. Lack of insurance was a big issue within the sample that we spoke to. So folks just didn't have the resources to be able to see a physician to access contraceptive methods. And then there was definitely a lack of understanding about the safety and efficacy of the various methods for both the men and the women. A lot of myths were discussed in terms of when you're talking about oral contraception and you're talking about IUDs and things of that nature. And then other barriers that the women and men discussed was discrimination that they felt when they entered healthcare providers' offices, and then general concerns related to immigration. We did have part of the sample that was undocumented. And then a couple of other things that didn't come out across all groups, but in some of the groups, is that we're finding that a lot of women are buying contraception at the local Latino markets in their neighborhoods. And this is including also shots like Depo, where they would then pay somebody at the market to provide the injection. And then they're also bringing contraception from their home countries because they're used to that, and that's what they know, and that's what they like. Interesting enough, religion was not a factor. In this, actually, one of the groups where we decided to actually straightforward ask the question about religion said, religion, that's great, we're religious, however, the church is not going to have to take care of the child once it's born. I'm the one that's going to have to take care of the child. So while there was acknowledgement of the church, there was still that sort of personal responsibility. At the end of the day, I'm the one that's going to have to do it, not the church. So we came up with two sort of overarching recommendations. One was the creation of a community-based health education and prevention program that included culturally appropriate and relevant information and materials in Spanish on a number of topics, including the different contraceptive methods that exist, their efficacy, safety, and side effects, and things that you might want to consider in choosing a birth control method. Strategies that would promote communication, strategies aimed at men, and instruction for women on how to monitor their own health. And the second recommendation in terms of outreach efforts that could increase the effectiveness of public information efforts included a specific strategy that should be developed to address the concerns that Latinos seek information and contraception from the local markets. So partnering with those sort of local bodegas in the community and providing them with information on contraception so that it's available where women are going. Working with pharmaceutical companies, that pharmaceutical companies should be partnering with local Latino community-based organizations, because we did find that overall the sample did not trust information coming from the pharmaceutical companies. So in terms of working with the local agencies to help provide information in a way that was more appropriate, and that using radio and television as opposed to print materials was seen as important. The radio was a huge one, especially in areas where you had a lot of day laborers, because you're listening to the radio on a constant basis, even though you might not be watching TV on a regular basis. So based on that, we decided to create a toolkit that would address some of these issues and some of the topics that came out of the discussion, and it would be delivered through Promotores de Salud. So the toolkit addressed family planning, what is it, why it's important, reproductive health, same thing. The male and female reproductive systems and function, because in order to talk about how contraception works, you need to know how your body works. And we found that the women just didn't really know how their body works and how contraception interacts with the function of their system to be able to prevent pregnancy. The various family planning methods, including oral, natural devices, permanent as well as barrier, and including their risk and benefits, because they were very clear. They wanted to know what were the risks and what were the benefits to each method of contraception. Communication, so that the women can engage in conversations with their partners, because although the men said their decision rests with their female partner, they still wanted to be involved, and they wanted to know what it was or what choice their partner had made in order to support that or provide alternate information. And then resources on family planning and reproductive health. We provided information on a national bilingual hotline that can connect people to local resources in their area. So the toolkit we designed, we wanted it to be multi-purpose so that the promotores could use it in their charlas, in their educational workshops, and that the community can view the information that it's not just about contraception, but it's also learning about your body and how it functions. It was, we wanted it to be interactive, and to that end, we included several activities, including an activity on myths that the women gave us and the men gave us during the actual focus group discussion. So we took their words and put it into an activity with them. And we wanted evidence-based, so we reviewed all of the contraceptive methods and provided as much information on each of those methods, including their risk and benefits. And then we wanted it to be adaptable so that it can be used in a variety of situations. One of the things that one of the women told us after the training, one of the promotoras told us, was that they can see this being used when we went out and we sort of pre-tested a draft version of it with them prior to providing them with a second draft based on their edits, that they can see using this as inviting their girlfriends over to see a movie, but doing this conversation and this talk with them prior to watching the movie. And then other women talked about sort of passion parties and having this as part of a passion party so that the people can feel more comfortable. So they're very innovative in what they thought they can do with the material, which essentially was a flip chart and a guide that they can use. So this is the first sort of cover of the draft, and originally we called it Entre Parejas, which is in between couples, and then we changed it to Entre Nosotras based on what the women were saying when it was pretested, so it's just amongst women. They really wanted this to be a conversation about how women can talk about this and educate each other. So again, we talked, started with family planning, what is it, what it means. And then if you've ever worked with promotores, oftentimes at NCLR we do flip charts, and the front side has an image like what you're looking at right now, but the back side has a script for the health promoter. So it was very evident to us, and from what the formative research said, that it needed to be bilingual. So there, everything that we do is bilingual. Although the front image isn't, there is a translation of that in the charla guide. And so the actual discussion is bilingual. Again, just some sample slides. And the women were, just so that you know, were very focused on the pictures. They wanted to make sure that the pictures were very representative of the communities that they were serving. So it actually, after we pre-tested the first draft, we went back and just are putting some final touches on what you're looking at right now, because they wanted pictures that were a little more more representative of the communities they serve. So we actually went through the female reproductive system, both internal and external organs, and the same thing for the men. And actually during the training, it was quite interesting with the health promoters, because we essentially started doing a mini anatomy class, because there was just really a lack of understanding. And this is really what captured them the most, particularly when we got to the men's slide. I mean, it was just focus. What does this do? What does this do? How does this work? So that was something that they felt was very important. And then barrier methods, so just one slide. Styles of communication, we did an exercise on role-playing and how you can communicate with your partner as well as communicating with your physician. And so we field tested with two different groups. We field tested with the promotoras, who provided us feedback and information. And then, so with that, we had two groups in New York and Chicago. And then we had 12 promotoras and 5 staff members that were trained in implementation of the curriculum. And then we also field tested with community members, and those charlas took place as well as in Chicago and New York. We had a group of 122 women and 6 men. Some of the groups had men and they didn't want to exclude them, so they kept them in, but most of the groups were solely women. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm talking and I didn't look at there's something else that I want to mention here. Just some other data in terms of field testing. I thought I had a slide on it, but then I remembered I deleted it. What the promotoras told us was that the training was very useful in helping them to understand the role that they were going to have in providing this information, that they felt that the activities that we included were very good and very helpful in helping to explain the information, and that the overwhelming majority of the participants in the training felt that the materials were culturally competent and that the content was appropriate for their community. And they all felt the materials were easy and very clear to use. They did tell us we needed to simplify some of the language, which we did. And then with the community members, we excluded the men because we were interested in, because this was geared towards women, we excluded the men. But the vast majority of the participants in the community field testing spoke Spanish. Their median age was 32 years old. Their average length of time in the U.S. was 10 and a half years. Over half didn't have health insurance. And for the group of community members that received this intervention or received the charla, the median age for a first sexual relationship was 18 years, but the median age for first use of contraception was 20 years of age. So there's a 2-year gap that we found with the women that we spoke to from when they first initiate sexual contact to when they actually start using contraception. What they told us that they felt that there was a great demand in the community for this type of information, that they weren't getting it and they wanted it, and that there was a lot of misunderstandings within the Latino community concerning this topic, and that they felt that the information, for the most part, was new information to them, and that they hadn't talked about it before because there were so many taboos. And overall, the materials, the activities, and the flip chart were very well received. In terms of next steps, what we're hoping to do is complete the production of the toolkit and seek opportunities to expand the implementation of it, and then evaluate the toolkit's ability to influence behavior, because ultimately that's where we want to get to. So we're hoping to be able to do that and connect with either local family planning organizations or local community clinics that can then serve as the providers of contraception to these women and continue the education that way. So gracias.
Now we'd like to entertain questions from the group for any of the speakers that we have here. Yes?
I have a question regarding the adult role. I guess that's a Maria question. She's my boss.
Any speaker in particular, or?
Have you considered what age is it appropriate to start giving sex education to children?
So we'll start with our speakers, but then if there's anyone else in the audience who would like to. I think another, I think I neglected to introduce myself. My name is Lucia Nang, and I'm on faculty at the University of South Carolina in the Department of Health Promotion, Education, and Behavior. And I actually do research generally in women's reproductive health, but currently focus with college-age females and have also done work with teens, and I'll be presenting an oral presentation tomorrow morning about a community based participatory research study where we went to a community group with the intention of developing a reproductive health education for freshman high school students. So just based on the research that I've done and the literature of other people in the field, I think we can consider the age at which these risk behaviors occur and then kind of extrapolate backwards or consider, okay, well, if we have pregnancies occurring at 18 for the Latinas in one study, and I don't know for the adult role models if there were any considerations that the parents may have had about when is the appropriate time to talk to their youth. If risk behaviors are happening earlier and earlier, right, then we have to consider, well, what age then, if these behaviors are occurring at age 13, 14, 15, then maybe talking to them at 13, 14, 15 isn't necessarily the best time, right? Maybe considering talking to them before considerations of these risk behaviors are even occurring cognitively. So that's one way to consider it, but I think someone else in the audience was going to try to respond.
Ongoing sex education.
Yes, please.
We definitely begin most of our sessions with a discussion on what their values and belief systems are. And then afterwards, we present with them with some facts about, you know, like condom, you know, success rates and issues of contraception, STIs, and a lot of facts. And then at the end, we do role playing, like with your child. What would you say? How would you say it is, you know, really important. But when we have a parent coming in with just like, they know who they're working with Planned Parenthood, and they know that there's more that I need to say with their children, because with a lot of the parents I work with, they came from a household that was, my parents never talked about sex. I did not learn anything from them, and this is what, you know, this is what occurred. So it's definitely looking at their past and then trying to see what could it change, whether that's opening the door. And a lot of them did emphasize, like, yes, wait till you're married, you know, abstinence, but if in the fact you can't, this is what I can, you know, these are the facts. So they're very much more receptive to kind of like opening the door and accepting more information. That's what I got with the parents I've worked with.
Two women or a group of women. So it's not just limited to two.
Right.
that's an interesting one.
Well, it's just something to test.